Rio de Janeiro
with a big man.
G'day, kaya, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Rio de Janeiro. My name is Abid Imam, and this show is all about engaging conversations with inspirational personalities and public figures to help us understand people, culture, and the world. On this episode, we are joined by Anne Catherine Yene. She is the team lead of volunteer management at FIFA. Yeah, you heard me right. We're talking about FIFA, the international global governing body of football. She's from France herself, and I worked with her and her team at the FIFA Women's World Cup 2023. And I just had to invite her on the show because I had such a great experience managing these volunteers with FIFA. AC has an incredible story to tell about how important the volunteers are to major sporting events and the impact they make in life in general. They are amazing people doing amazing things, and AC is a sports leader at the highest level, so it's really a wonderful opportunity to hear about her pathway and lessons working on FIFA World Cups and Olympic Games. This is a great listen for anyone who loves volunteering, supporting volunteers, or even wants to understand more about what it's like behind the scenes of a major sporting event. So basically, everyone should listen. But thank you to AC for making the time during her busy schedule, and she was joining me from Dubai as well. This show couldn't be where it is without your support, so please give me a review or a subscribe to help support Rio de Janeiro storytelling. So enjoy this conversation with Anne Catherine Yene from FIFA. AC, thank you so much for joining me on the Rio de Janeiro podcast. I'm honored to have you on, really excited as well. And we actually worked quite closely a little bit before the FIFA Women's World Cup last year here in Australia, New Zealand. It was an honor to be part of it. And during my onboarding as a volunteer manager in Perth, Boorloo, you were guiding us from Zurich on what we needed to get ready for and the scale of the tournament. So I really appreciate your leadership there. And as a team lead of volunteers at FIFA, I can't wait to go into your experiences, your journey in the industry, as well as insights into leading people from diverse parts of the world in some of the biggest sporting events on the planet. So thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always really interesting to be able to exchange with people I've worked with before and people who have an interest in volunteer management.
AC, I always love to get to the beginning of a journey of somebody, and with yourself, I know you're from France, but tell me where you grew up and what did you enjoy doing as a youngster?
I grew up next to Paris. I was born in the east of France, but then moved very young to basically in Paris, where I was always a very active kid. So I was doing loads of different sports, getting injured pretty much quite often. One of my sports were actually tennis and completely not football at the time. So that's quite interesting that I'm now ending up in football.
Were you following the local French football or were you into some international stuff?
Oh, funny enough, my team was Bordeaux, which is actually more west of France, but more because my friends were all supporting that team. So I wasn't so much in Paris Saint-Germain, but then I was always following Arsenal. Which, funny enough, is one of the if somewhere where I worked and volunteered for quite a few years after.
Yeah, tell me about that, because as an Arsenal fan, getting to go to London, you spent some time there doing your Masters of Events and you got to immerse into London quite well with the sports industry. Tell us about what it was like to actually volunteer at the club that you support.
Technically, I didn't even know they had volunteer program. I didn't know about Arsenal in the community. So I actually went to Arsenal to try and see if they had match day jobs because I was studying my master there and thought I could actually earn money on the side. And they said that they didn't have positions at the time, but they had the Arsenal in the community program, which one of that program is called Double Club. So you do 45 minutes of classes, 45 minutes of coaching. And I was very lucky that I was with a coach that actually taught me how to coach. So I was actually technically only there to do the 45 minute of classes with the kids on literacy, numeracy, French. And actually after my first year at Arsenal, they pay for my badges. So I'm a level 2 coach actually in the UK.
Amazing. And, you know, Arsenal do have a very strong connection with French players. So, and Arsene Wenger and the likes. So there's another one there. I'd love to dig into your time in London because, of course, there was the London 2012 Olympics, which you said was one of your first major events to work on. How do you reflect on, you know, your first initial steps in major international sporting events?
I would say London was probably one of the, career-wise, it was one of the best time in the sense of I started as a volunteer at Arsenal, like we just talked about, and I found a job in a company called Legacy Lives, and I was part of the team organizing a conference on legacy on major event and mega event, which I met there someone that was the CEO of the London Youth Games at the time, and he, Russell, and he actually asked me if I wanted to be part of the new program that they were starting, which was the team leader program for London Youth Games. That was also a volunteering program where you'd be leading a team on some of the areas of the event, which I did for a couple, actually 3 years, I think, if I remember correctly. And my first year, I actually met the Andy Newman, who's actually today the head of volunteer management for 26, the World Cup 26, who we met during this event. We met again at a council event later on that same year. And he actually asked me to send my CV. You know how you always think, oh, people is asking you to send your CV and nothing's going to happen. Actually, he called me back pretty much straight away. I interviewed with Nicola Sweeney, who was my manager for London 2012, and I actually got the job, and I did a year and a half at London 2012, which was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I mean, to me, London 2012 is probably one of the top 10 events I've ever done because of the team that I was in. I was part of the management recruitment for the volunteer recruitment team, and we had volunteers every day helping us recruit volunteers. We were operational for almost 18 months, so that was quite a long time. And it was kind of becoming a family. It was, to be honest, it's one of the best team I've ever been at.
We're going to have listeners who love sports and watch major sporting events, but not many people will understand just what it is to be working behind the scenes and to dedicate a chunk of your life to making sure an event runs smoothly. I'd really like to know that intensity and to give us an insight into just how hard you have to work to make an event like this come together. You know, sometimes there's no days off, and I saw a quote where you said the volunteers got you through the experience. So how do you reflect on that type of intensity of the work?
Well, on paper, we're supposed to have days off. In reality, it's just that there's so much going on. You're working with so many different function area projects that then their timing might be different than yours. There's urgency. I know we don't do a life and death job, so I think you also need to be kind of careful of how much you're working, but it's easy to get kind of swept in and actually forgetting that you also need to sleep because there's uniform to distribute, there's shift to change, there's information to send out, there is catering to sort out. There's so many different elements that need to come together, which aren't just dependent on yourself. It's depending on an entire team, which they also have thousands of other things to do. So in the end, sometimes getting it all together, it does take time. It's not an easy fix. So yeah, sometimes you don't have days off and you're thinking, oh my God, I need a couple of hours of sleep. I'm not going to survive. But the volunteers, they have this energy. They're so happy to be here. And for some of them, it's their first experience. For some of them, they've done this for years. They have also their own lives outside of volunteering, which you can really tap into in the sense of their knowledge, their experience. Sometimes just a small conversation, the volunteer will say, oh, actually, I've done this before, and they actually find the solution. They also get you through it because they're the one that actually reminds you to actually eat. They're the one who actually reminds you to drink, because they observe what you're doing. And sometimes they come out and they're like, well, you haven't eaten today. Here, I found this. Do you want to eat it? Maybe it would be better. I mean, I know it's small things, but it does make a difference. And it's super heartwarming when you haven't slept for 4 days or slept 2 hours a night, basically. And someone's actually been quite thoughtful. So I have to admit, like, volunteers, they just have this energy that makes such a difference.
It is really amazing. And the people who do volunteer at major sporting events or even in community work, we do say a big thank you to you. And it has been life-changing to work with people who are just so positive and willing to help, which has been the biggest thing seeing behind the scenes at the World Cup here in Perth, Boorloo as well. And AC, you got to have the opportunity to work then at Euro 2016 in a different functional area in team services. Tell us about moving from that focus of volunteers to now working really closely with the elite teams who are trying to win championships and have that high pressure environment around them.
Well, 2016, Euro 2016, actually, I worked with a lot of function areas. So I started Euro 20, I was actually what was called a general coordinator. So basically, I worked with about seven different teams. So team services, training sites, guest operation, accommodation. I mean, quite a few of the teams where I didn't have a dedicated full dedicated project. So when I started, I actually supported the training site team. So doing all the contracting, et cetera, to make sure that we had team-based camps. I then supported for the draw and team services workshop for all the teams and for them to come and get all the information needed for 2016, making sure they were set up properly for the competition, knowing how to import everything, etc. So it was actually quite interesting to see all the different sides. For the competition itself, I was actually guest operation, so looking after VIP and DVIP in the Stadium of Bordeaux, which, funny enough, is the team that I actually support.
With all of those experiences coming together, the opportunity came for you to look after or to help kickstart the FIFA volunteer brand. I just wanted to, before we dig into that, what was the why for FIFA? What were the context behind the decision to have a global volunteer program?
I think knowledge transfer and retention of volunteers. One thing that was quite often mentioned in feedback of volunteers was that they love to jump from one event to the other, see other countries, etc. Plus, the fact that the local organizing committee or LFS, the FIFA subsidiary, didn't necessarily have always the knowledge in house, especially more or LOCs that had never put on a major event before. And this was really lacking at FIFA at the time. So our management actually decided to reintegrate the program and having a team that could really support all our LFS, LOCs, create a FIFA framework, etc. So basically having supportive documents, having a platform where one-stop shop for all our events, where we could manage the volunteers. And that was... that was a major project for 2019 and then it was approved, which basically in 2019, the job came out and I applied. I was already working at FIFA at the time, but on guest operation. So my background is a mix between guest operation and volunteer management as the top things I've done. And I applied for the job and ended up moving in that team and created the FIFA volunteering team. So that was actually... it's been quite a big challenge, but it's been really rewarding.
FIFA has over a million volunteers on the platform, which is an amazing achievement. Tell us about how important your volunteer management platform is to communicate with volunteers, to have their profiles on there, and then also to schedule and have them on their rosters and ensure that communication and engagement.
The platform is actually really key to what we do, because that's where we start the entire journey for the volunteers. So from application to getting all the information for accreditation, but also inviting them for interview, tracking who's doing what. It's really key. It's a big job also because we tailor the platform that we bought. We bought the license. I mean, it's not ours, but we worked with the team from our platform to make sure that it was tailored to what we do, because we do have a specific setup in the sense of we run for almost 2 months on some of the events, and it's really key, and it's a massive tool, but it's really the base of everything. I have to admit that it's a lot of training to make sure that everyone that uses it across all the tournaments is doing it right, because you can it can get frustrating if not. But once the initial training is done, it's then really easy to manage the program, because every single step is actually looked into, from recruitment to interview, like including interviews, to role allocation, to schedule allocation, to also reward and recognition. So there's a part where you can allocate items that people can receive. So it's all logged. Same for also you can create your feedback forms, etc. So to be very honest, it is a lot of work for setup. So we've been actually quite lucky that we managed to create the what we call the recipe. So basically now we have a template for each of our tournament that is pretty much easy to re-implement. So there's not the full setup to do every time. So Julien Robert, my volunteer manager in the team, actually is the one who created that with Miled, our counterpart, and for the platform. And to be honest, it's a godsend. Literally one file, you upload it, and it just creates the setup. So it's just perfect.
Amazing, amazing. And I'd love to know, when you actually developed the FIFA volunteer program, were there any other volunteer programs around the world in different sports or in community environments that you looked to for inspiration or to help guide?
Yes, I actually did months of knowledge transfer. So I reached out to UEFA, IOC, Paris 24, London Youth Games. I actually reached out to really every type of different program, community programs, just to make sure that I understood how they did it, what would their advice, what would they say this was definitely a challenge, and they would, if I could actually then let them know how we go around it. Like I spent, I would say, about 4 months every single week calling different organization and making sure that I could basically take out the best out of every program to make sure I would actually kind of answer all the different questions that volunteers would have if we actually get the program together. One thing that I also did is interview volunteers themselves again. I mean, I was a volunteer. That's how I started. So I do understand what a volunteer wants, and I still volunteer. So I'm trying to keep that kind of knowledge up to date. But it's always interesting to see how volunteer management and volunteers themselves have changed over the last few years. I think volunteer management has become a lot more professional in a way. And the expectations of volunteers have evolved a lot from when I started working about 20 years ago and now.
What do you think some of those expectations have become? How has that evolved with volunteers over time?
Well, I think that before, I mean, it's going to make me sound super old, but platform didn't really exist, or a lot of things were done more over the phone than by email. Like, we were still faxing things when I started. So it makes a difference. Now everything is instant. So volunteers expect the information to be available at all times and easy to find. Shift should be able to be chosen easily. The reward and recognition program is something that is key. Well, And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, actually. I'm just saying the expectations are slightly different, and maybe more instant than it was before, probably because of how communication has evolved. Before, people didn't have internet on their phones. People didn't have access to everything on their phones. So you would wait in the evening to read your emails, for example, or over the weekend, versus now you instantly can reply. You instantly can click on a button to apply for a competition, which is not something that used to be the case. So it makes the expectation of information and quickness of something very different.
That is really insightful. And also you're currently in Dubai, preparing for the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup, and there's tournaments all around the world coming up in, for instance, Uzbekistan and Dominican Republic, Colombia. I'm really interested in what you observe as the cultural differences in volunteering and the attitudes towards volunteering. And the reason why I ask is I was recently at a conference, Volunteering WA conference here in Western Australia, and they were talking about how in some languages, volunteer, the actual word doesn't exist. So just interested in the different attitudes you've come across, what you've seen.
Well, in some country, like, for example, in Qatar, volunteering didn't necessarily really exist. So this was a lot of educational piece to be done prior to World Cup, and which was also done with, which was massively done, actually, with the team on site, with AFC events and more local events. But before, it didn't really exist, and now it's actually part of the culture. So it's actually very interesting to see. The difference is also the expectation on volunteers depending on the country. But I generally find that the excitement is always the same, and the willingness to help is always the same. It's maybe more the educational part in explaining what it means that might be slightly different, and a different approach to have people understand what it actually means to volunteer. Because it is people giving their free time for free, which also in some country doesn't even exist or is not even possible.
Looking at the FIFA World Cup in Qatar 2022, that was the first men's FIFA World Cup with the FIFA volunteer platform or brand. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I was there in person, and that tournament was one that actually I took my mum to, and she had a really positive experience with a volunteer because we went to back-to-back matches. It was a hot day. She was looking for some water, and one of the volunteers stopped and said, "Just wait here, I'll go and get a bottle of water for you," before the stadium actually opened, with the gates open. And that was such a positive experience that it inspired her to become a volunteer for the FIFA Women's World Cup. And we're still in touch with that volunteer that we met in Qatar. Just thinking about the legacy and how people get involved in other tournaments afterwards, after having a really good experience, how does FIFA or do you manage or measure legacy in your volunteer program in a local area after you finished?
So that's generally more the government and the local organizing committee who does that after. We try and understand what we leave behind, because this is part of the actual framework of making sure that we do make a difference. What we can measure is the amount of people that we train and kind of put back in the market in a way with different skills, different understanding of an event. We're still in progress in making sure that we can actually measure the legacy of a program, and how we can actually make sure that we know what impact has been created. This is actually part of the strategy, a very big part of the strategy for Men's World Cup in 2026.
Which will be very big scale. I mean, what can you tell us about the 2026 FIFA World Cup? At this point in time, where people listen, we've just found out the match schedule. But from a volunteer program perspective, what are you planning?
We're still working on it, because there is quite a lot of legal aspects with the US particularly, which we're still trying to iron out. But the idea is to roll out the program in each of the cities, working with the cities to do an integrated program like you actually did in Women's World Cup, being one team, one dream. And so we're really working through that. It does look like it's going to be quite a big scale and a step up in the sense in terms of numbers from Qatar. But it's also because we're going back to a different city model, which Qatar was really compact. In one city, everything was within driving distance, which is definitely not the case for the US, Mexico, and Canada. And we'll roll out the same program in the three countries.
It's very exciting. I think football fans can't wait to get involved. And AC, I'm really interested in your perspective of the FIFA Women's World Cup, because this was one where you weren't on the ground. You got to maybe enjoy it from the spectator's perspective. What was your experience being in Europe watching the FIFA Women's World Cup 2023?
It was actually quite interesting not to be on site. But I wasn't also on the Men's World Cup on site because I was pregnant at the time and I could fly in but not fly back. So I had to deliver from Zurich. And it's always interesting when you're actually not on the ground, because by the time the different challenges get to you, they're already quite big, because you were not necessarily in the loop and not on the ground. You don't have the full info. So it was actually also nice for the Women's World Cup to see the matches on TV, and it looked amazing. And actually knowing, because you're still part of the organizing team, because I was still having meetings with the team quite often, still talking to Yana all the time. And it was just very interesting to actually see how you guys were delivering and the challenges you were facing. But then on for everyone else, it didn't show. It's always the interesting part on events where your friends or people you know, and when you say you've worked on this event, they're like, oh my God, it was so amazing, this and this. And you're thinking, oh, for us, it was hard work. But it's then super pleasant to see that, even though sometimes you were thinking, oh my God, this is really not working, what are we doing? It doesn't show on the other side, on the broadcaster, for example, or the fans, which essentially is also what we want, that it just looks like it's super smooth. So same for the team. They don't see that we're working sometimes until very late hours to make it work, because something went wrong or you can no longer access through this place, so you have to find another route, or catering cannot deliver anymore tomorrow because something happened. It's also always funny to see that it's kind of like when one thing goes wrong, the whole day goes wrong. I don't know if that was also your experience sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it was my first major tournament, and I'm addicted now. I can't wait for another opportunity when it comes. But to do it at home as well in your home city was really special, and I'm loving the fact that so many of the volunteers who were part of that are now asking me about tennis tournaments or rugby World Cup coming up and different things. So they just all have the event bug and they want to get involved passionately. So that's been really good. But from a volunteer community now with over a million people, what can you tell us about the demographics of the FIFA volunteer community? Is it a younger generation? Are we seeing mix of everybody? What's it like in that team?
We're not yet a million, actually. We are about 850,000 people. In terms of demographic, it's a massive mix, actually. And it's not necessarily more of the younger generation. Our retired community is fairly massive, actually. Funny enough, I just actually have on my computer open the presentation with the demographics, where we actually have our biggest part is about 60% of 18 to 29 year old, actually. So it is the younger generation, but we do have our 30 to 40 that are still 30% of our platform, and then the rest is between 50 to over 40, which is still almost 10% of our numbers. So it's still quite a big number. But it's also interesting enough, our over 40 are a big part of the program on the ground itself, because they quite often have more time. So then they're the one that is pretty much there. At the moment, our top nationalities are really like India, Indonesia. I mean, to be honest, the under-17 in Indonesia draw a massive amount of interest. We had about 100,000 applications for only about 1,000 roles available. So that was a big that was a big gap.
Yeah, you guys pretty much broke the internet nearly in Indonesia with that. But
that was an interesting one. We had to shut down the platform when we opened for Indonesia, actually, because it was we opened it on 5th of December 22. So in the middle of the World Cup, actually, in Qatar, not really realizing the amount of traction this would actually get. But that also meant it sold the platform for the Qatar team. So we had to kind of pause it for a few hours while they were delivering matches and then open it back up.
That's so good. And I got a little bit presumptuous there about saying a million people, but hopefully very soon you'll be able to celebrate 1 million people on the platform. AC, you have such an amazing role as a leader at a global sports organization. Tell us about your travel schedule. You know, I'm sure you get to go across different parts of the world and balance with your own life as well. But what does it look like for you to, in a typical year, to get to different countries?
It's a busy schedule. It's coming down a bit because the team has grown up a lot since I joined. So I generally do about 2 tournaments a year. So that's about between 5 weeks to 2 or 3 months, depending on which tournament it is that I'm gone. Plus site, what we call site visits, also knowledge transfer meetings, etc. So before I had a daughter, I was gone, I would say, about 40% of my time. Now we've reworked. First, we had more resources coming in. So we're now 2 full-time staff on top of me, plus 2 freelancers that are full-time. And we then also take freelancers on events. So we no longer, we try for some events to no longer go the whole time, in the sense of we go with 2 people, and the person that is Zurich based will stay until the end of group stage. And then the freelancer that is fully trained, fully part of our, they're still fully part of our team, actually. Sometimes I don't really necessarily like the term freelancer, but there's not, in the sense of everyone thinks that they're not part of the team when you're saying freelancers, but they are. They're part of our workshops also when we're talking strategy, etc. Because when they deliver on site, they also have all this insightful information that we need. The reason why we also try and not go now to the full tournament for some of them is because the work in Zurich doesn't stop. So the other tournament do not stop. We do generally work on minimum 4 events at the same time. So when you're on site, as you know, you have no time for something else, or it's super difficult. So if we go the whole time, then we're pretty much out of commission for 5 to 14, 16 weeks. So then it's difficult to kind of catch up. And it's also unfair on the other tournament you work on. So then they don't hear from you for such a long time. And it's just not fair because they need this information, or they need your support, and you're just not there. So we're trying to really find a model that works where we still travel, because to be honest, it is important to be on site. It is important to be with the volunteers and understand what they need, what they want, what could we change, what could we make better. Because to be honest, without volunteers, and this I will never say it enough, we wouldn't be able to put on some of the tournaments, or most of the tournaments, to be honest, or events. We can't thank them enough for what they do. And so many of them go the extra mile, which makes such a difference.
There will be listeners here that work with volunteers as well, and will be inspired by your comments around how to create an environment that supports volunteers and ensures they have a great experience. What are some things you can impart on people listening who will work with volunteers in the future?
I would say listen to them. I mean, it's really key. Sometimes it also makes such a difference on someone's life. Like, I mean, to be honest, I'm still in touch with so many of the volunteers I worked with. And I don't know if you've experienced that, but when you see some of the volunteers and they come in, they're extremely shy. They've never done this. They don't really know what to expect. And when you see them from their first day and their last day, and they don't want to leave, and they come out of their shells, for me, that's one of the reasons why I do this, is how we can actually impact someone's life, and how how much of a difference we can make. You also put together people that would never in a million years meet each other. And you create connections that you would unlikely have in your life if this wasn't through a volunteer program. For me, I think the big thing is really treat the program like you actually would want to be treated as a volunteer. And then it falls into place because you know what your own expectation is in life. You also know what's important, what is key. I mean, sometimes when people are not in volunteer management, the whole catering thing is always, oh, is this such a big deal? It is a big deal. You're asking people to come and give their time. Catering needs to be on point. The reward and recognition needs to be on point because, well, you need to thank them properly. It's that they're really helping you put on your event together. And without them, most of the time, they're the biggest part of the workforce. They're more than the paid staff. So if you don't treat them right, you're just not going to get where you need to. And to be very honest, it's all the human side of it. Like the stories that come out, the stories of the volunteers, their background, why they're volunteering, what have they done in their lives before, what inspired them to volunteer. It's always such a good stories. And it's one thing that I really like is being able with our different content team to be able to showcase those stories and give them a platform. Because it does make a difference.
I really love the work FIFA and yourself have done with telling those stories. I was reading last night from the Club World Cup in Saudi Arabia, the young man who was vision impaired or blind as he was identifying, and also the great individuals that were highlighted through the Women's World Cup. I love those stories. They're so good. I also wonder, through working with so many diverse people in different countries, what has it taught you about leadership and how has it helped you in your leadership journey?
I think flexibility and understanding where people are coming from, the different culture, the different reasoning behind a lot of the behaviors. I think it's something that, the unconscious bias that we all have, you tend to kind of be more aware of it when you work with so many different teams and so many different ways of working, to be very honest. And it really taught me a lot about how I need to adapt and I'm the one that needs to change in some of the circumstances.
That's very insightful. Absolutely. Thank you. And I know we're mindful of time, AC, so I'd love to know, are you much of a book reader or a podcast listener?
I try to. I have to admit that since my daughter has been born, I have not exactly picked up a book except for educational books. So it's been a bit of a shift in what I'm reading and also listening to. I do like to listen to a lot of different podcasts because I think it's always such an easy on your commute. To be able to listen to podcasts and different people's experience. What I love podcasts about more people story, I have to admit.
Do you have any recommendations?
It's all mostly French one at the moment, and it's really all about kids. So I'm not sure our listeners are so much into those, but it was one called Ma Présence, which is about your postpartum journey and this whole how do you combine as a woman working and being a mom. A lot of it is about first time mom, which is my case, where how do you not feel guilty or anxious, or at least not necessarily not feel it, but how to actually live with it in a way. I don't know if this makes sense, but more it's true. Like I've never been as anxious as I've been since I've been a mom. Even by putting on the different workups, I find that easier than being a mom, to be honest. I love it, but sometimes it's just, it's just very interesting because you there's things that you used to never worry about that all of a sudden you're worrying about. But I have to admit, I think working in events and being a mom, it has a lot of correlation, and your brain functions very. I mean, I know that we had talked about it at the start of the Women's World Cup, where you think about all the challenges, issues, risks, etc. And I feel like sometimes this really helps when you're a mom, because there's all this bigger picture that you're looking at.
Have there been any support networks in the sport industry with mums in this specific area, or what has really helped you in terms of talking through and going through?
I would say actually people that I work with or used to work with when they learned that I was having a baby or learned that I had a baby. I think the women's network in general in the sports industry is actually really good of giving advice or being able to tap into that knowledge of women who've had babies before in the events industry and how they've managed the challenge of still working and traveling. Because on this competition, my husband and my daughter didn't come, but I went to Mexico in December last year and they actually came.
I know we're short of time, so I really do appreciate it, but I would love to know, what would you like to leave the audience with? Do you have any ask of them? And this is your platform to promote that.
I would say if you have time and if you want, do volunteer and experience that once in your life, because to be honest, I think it's one of the best thing, and not just because I work in volunteer management, but because I was a volunteer when I started. That's how I actually got where I am today, to be honest. And I would say, listen to the volunteers when they actually want to tell you their stories, because you'd be very, very surprised of actually who they are, what they've done in their lives. This is something that I find that sometimes people not working in volunteer management kind of forget. There's this kind of stigma about volunteers being people that are unemployed, don't really have much to do, but this is actually the complete opposite. I don't know if you've experienced that, but to me, I've experienced that my whole life, where people have this kind of negative approach sometimes of who volunteers are. And to be honest, it's, if you're part of it, it's the complete opposite. And some people, they don't actually have the time to volunteer, technically speaking, but they're making the time. And that's, to me, that's always very impressive.
Unbelievable. We could talk about that forever.
Yes, definitely. It's always a topic that there's so much to talk about on volunteers, I think.
Well, AC, thank you so much for sharing your pathway, your journey, your insights, and really do wish you the best in continuously growing the program and your family life, and also with the next steps, the next big tournaments coming up. So loved working with you, and hopefully we can in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And no, definitely, I let's keep in touch. And I really hope that our path cross again, and this time in person.
Yes, absolutely. And there we have it. That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for listening. As a community-cultivated, independent podcast, your support means the world, so we can keep these important conversations flowing, taking Wallyl up to the world and the world to Wallyl up. Until next time, keep smiling, keep scoring.